Good morning. My name is Ted Wilson. I'd like to thank my co-authors, Dr. Yuben Yang and Jenny Wong. Today I'm going to give a brief overview of an aspect of our research on facility site selection involving bioenergy systems. Particularly, I'm looking at the Gulf Coast region of Texas and Texas more broadly speaking. Okay. So the major goals of the overall program is to assess site-specific yield performance of bioenergy crops. Specifically, what we're talking about at this level are high biomass sorghums, late flowering sorghums, if you like, and energy cane or high fiber sugar canes. Identify potential biorefinery sites and production footprints. And finally, develop a regional integrated crop production and management system for a mixture of these bioenergy crops and conventional crops in a region. Specifically for this talk, I'm only going to be talking about or focusing on a very small part of our overall program. I'm going to talk a bit about the model integration and how we have feedstock production models tied partly to the DSAT series, and then feedstock simulation output, and finally, how we use this biomass data combined with economic analyses to give a preliminary estimate of feasibility. Now, as aspect of this, we're going to look at the field level yield predictions and the yield variability. We're going to end up simulating every field in Texas, and I'll go over that in some detail. So roughly 1.5 million fields. And we're also looking at the dynamics of integrating cropland, climatic, and soils databases, so that these underpinnings of the simulation models are used to determine the performance of the simulated crops. And finally, I'll very briefly show a little bit of the data on the GIS aspects. Now, the type of data that we've used in this particular model include planting date distributions from USDA Risk Management Association, biomass and yield simulations for 30 years. I'm only going to present very small part of that, using the 9 DSAT conventional models, rice PSM, which is a rice model, which we use in our part of the country, and an energy cane and biomass sorghum model. We're also using USDA ERS commodity pricing data for different districts within Texas, and enterprise budgets for both conventional and bioenergy crops from Texas A&M AgriLife Research and USDA ERS. We use road network information to calculate the transportation costs and an average cost of 18.6 cents per megagram per kilometer moved. And I'm going to present some data at different pricing schedules for the effect on the output in terms of net profitability. And we're assuming for this particular presentation a 28.5% conversion efficiency. Finally, I'm going to cover an optimization method that our group has developed, which is basically a variable grid size approach for identifying the size of a footprint necessary to feed a bioenergy facility at a certain capacity. Now, underpinning much of our analyses are different databases that we've assembled over space and time. The cropland database from NASS, we have 7 years of data for almost every field in the continental United States. Dr. Yang and I have produced a paper on that, by the way. There are some major problems with the NASS databases. And so you might want to look into that if you're interested, if correct capturing of the polygonal size of individual fields is important to you. We use the ESRI street map data for our transportation optimization analyses. And we use our climatic stations, our database that we've assembled, which has roughly 30,000 climate stations worldwide and a bit fewer than 14,000 climate stations in Texas. Finally, we use a normalized, if you like, or orthogonalized Sergo database. If you dig into the shape file from Sergo, what you'll see is that from one location to the next, the layers have different dimensions. So we standardize that based on analyses of the data on a paper by Yang et al. Now, when you talk about biomass production, an important component is the issue of having 365 feedstock supply. So in the analysis I'm going to present here, we address some of the issues of just-in-time harvesting, aerobic storage, and bunker silo storage. What this graph shows is the amount of dry mass loss under one of those scenarios based on data from Bolton and Holmes, 2014. And it shows that there's a very rapid loss in biomass up to about 7-8% during the first 20 days of storage, and then a gradual increase to another 2% for a period of about 180 days. So we've integrated this information into our analyses. Now what this shows is just a screenshot per se of the variable grid size approach that we've used in our analysis. Think of it this way. As input to the model, you enter the capacity of the refinery. And based on the capacity, this analysis then breaks the state into different checkerboards and progressively makes those smaller and smaller, eliminating those using specific rules for those that are the least preferred, the least productive third. And so it hones in on fire and fighter grids that could be respective biorefineries based on the productivity and the size of those areas. We end up with, in this case, the identification of the top 20 facility sites based on that productivity and the aggregation or relative size of how close the fields are to each other. If you look at that graph of Texas on the left, you'll see a bunch of red bars. What those demarcate are the Upper Gulf Coast, the Lower Gulf Coast, and the Rio Grande Valley. Roughly speaking, three production areas of that Gulf Coast area of Texas. And what those CDFs, or community distribution functions, show for each of those are $40, $50, $60, and $65 per megaton, if you like, or 1,000 kilograms. And what you see is that none of them have the 50% point of profitability, i.e., on average, an operation being profitable during the course of production. If we look at the summary table near the bottom right, what you see is the Upper Gulf Coast averaging roughly 17.6 megagrams or 1,000 kilograms per hectare. The lower Gulf Coast, 12.3, the Rio Grande Valley, 13.4 or 13.5. Similarly, you see the economic break-even points ranging from as high as $93.45 per 1,000 kilograms of dry weight to as low as 71.76 kilograms. These are averages of both the dry land and the irrigated production. So if you break that apart and look at it in more detail, and focusing probably on the far right, you see some asterisks. The first column of asterisks represent the economic break-even point using the 2011 NREL analysis, which is based on 2007 data. So what it says or suggests is that irrigated biomass sorghum in the Upper Gulf Coast, irrigated biomass sorghum in the Rio Grande Valley, non-irrigated for the Upper Gulf Coast, and so on for the energy cane in, oh, darn it, how did that happen? You can see a non-PC person here hitting something. If I can get that to, I'm not sure why that won't. Maybe if I click the bottom, it'll come to the front.
There we go.
Yeah. So it shows using the 2007 numbers that NREL used in their 2011 report, these predictor productivity levels are suitable for economic viability. Now, however, if you look at current prices, and those are basically the $1.90 per gallon gasoline equivalents, or that would be a $1.25 gallon ethanol production, or 48.5 cents per gallon minimum selling price, only two of the scenarios would be economically feasible. So what that suggests is that it's going to be somewhat marginal to have broad-scale application of this analysis to actually growing a crop for bioenergy production using current market prices. However, if the market prices returned to levels more comparable to 2007 or 2011 even, then it might be broadly economically feasible. Now, the analysis also looks at issues of stability of water supply. If you look at the stable water supplies to the eastern part of Texas, you see that we have higher levels of water if you look at the prism graph there. In fact, to the far southeast part of Texas, we average 1.6 meters or 64 inches of rainfall per annum. While if you look at the far left, West Texas, it's about 13 centimeters. If you look at that green band going up and down, where it transitions into a blue, roughly speaking, that's about 25 to 30 inches of rainfall a year. And so that's roughly speaking close to the division point where you have a stable to the east and unstable production environment to the west. Also, if you look at the upper graph on your right, you have different counties represented in those areas that are listed as having stable water supplies. What that graph shows is the minimum yields, the maximum yields, and the average yields. So what we can assess for a year and across years is the stability of production for different areas, because that's key to a biorefinery based on cellulosic production. Similarly, if we look at the biorefinery footprint, the lower left, the blue bars, you see some considerable variability in how big the operation needs to be to support a refinery of a particular size. In conclusion, the cellulosic-based biofuels crop production opportunities are marginal with current world prices, but appear to be highly profitable for 2011 fuel prices. Will we get back there? Yes. When? Who knows? Will there still be a research infrastructure in place? Who knows? Now, if we look at our futures, we're looking at planting rotation options, harvesting and transport equipment, scheduling and routing, year-round biomass supply, the incorporation of biotic stresses into feedstock production efficiency. Pardon me. Dr. Yang will be giving a presentation tomorrow at 10:30 talking about some of our work on linking invasive insect species on the grassy species, the rice, the sugarcane, energy cane, sorghum. So that might be interesting to some of you. We're also looking at refining the footprint estimates, taking into account more specifics in terms of greater detail on the transportation costs. We're looking at efficiency of continually evolving best cellulosic feedstock conversion methods. In the 1980s, the conversion efficiencies were as low as about 17%. They're now pushing 30%, and all indications are that they may continue to increase, and that changes the economics of the game considerably. We're also looking at environmental and economic risk analysis, a complete life cycle analysis, including analysis involving the GREET components. And lastly, we're going to do a U.S.-wide analysis, feedstock production, and facility site selection. Thank you. I'll try to answer any questions that you may have. I know I went through that pretty much like a storm quickly.